Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. As the COVID-19 pandemic has spread across the globe, so have conspiracy theories about the virus's origin and severity. The virus has been said to be a bioweapon, the creation of powerful individuals, and the result of 5G technology, to name a few. It's also been said to be an overhyped story, one that Democrats and the media are using to damage President Trump's re-election odds. While these narratives may not be based in evidence, they can impact public opinion and the public's behavior. And that can be particularly dangerous during a public health crisis. Other theories outside the mainstream, like that aliens have secretly made contact with humans, don't necessarily affect whether someone takes precautions to help keep the people around them safe. And while some conspiracy theories like the aliens one or that the Warren Commission got the details of JFK's assassination wrong cross partisan lines, this conspiracy theory surrounding COVID-19 is taking on a particularly political nature. So today, we're going to discuss how widespread these theories are, why they exist, and whether there's anything that can be done about them. And here with me to discuss that are Professor of Political Science at the University of Miami, Joe Uzinski. Hey, Joe, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here.
And Joe also researches conspiracy theories and misinformation and wrote the book American Conspiracy Theories. And also here with us is 538's senior science writer, Maggie Kurth. Welcome to the podcast, Maggie. Good to have you with us. You've also written about conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right. Interesting topic. Let's start by getting a sense of the scope of these COVID-19 conspiracy theories. Joe, how widespread is the belief in them in the United States?
So the first thing you want to think about is the number of conspiracy theories out there. So unlike, you know, when you have an official account of an event where there's really one or maybe a few official accounts, conspiracy theories are like fan fiction. So anyone can make up anything they want, anytime they want, to suit any need that they might have. So there are a lot of theories floating around out there, and there's going to be more and more popping up as people let their creative conspiracy juices flow. I've polled on two of these, which are the two major strands, and one is that the threat has been exaggerated to hurt President Trump in an election year, and the other is that it was purposely released or purposely created, which I'd call sort of the bioweapon conspiracy, and both come in at about 30% of Americans saying they believe in it. And that was in mid-March, right, when this was starting to ramp up.
Would you think that that's gone up at this point, held steady? Like, how do these things evolve over time?
It's hard to know. I am going to be putting another poll into the field probably in a few weeks, so I'll be able to track it. But I just don't know at this point, because part of it is that the people who are going to buy into it probably already bought into it. And there is sort of a firewall out there where people who aren't going to buy into the conspiracy theories, you know, no matter how long this drags on, they're not going to change their mind and become COVID-19 truthers.
Yeah. Maggie, how does this compare with some of the other conspiracy theories out there that 30% of Americans think there are sinister forces at play surrounding COVID-19?
Honestly, it doesn't shock me that it's that high. I would be surprised if it doesn't get higher, honestly, from what I've seen in research on conspiracy theories. It depends on the specific theory, but when you get down to it, almost all of us believe in some kind of conspiracy theory. You know, it may not be we all believe in the same one. I think, if I recall correctly, that the JFK conspiracies were one of the most widely believed, and it was something like, you know, 50 or 60% of Americans believe something transpired with that that was not part of the official story. But almost all Americans, when you start doing these surveys, the more detailed you get about which specific conspiracies you ask about, the higher percentage of people end up believing in at least one of them, to the point that most of the researchers that I talk to believe that all of us have our thing. You know, you just may not think it is. And so you may not think you believe in a conspiracy theory, but you probably do.
Yeah. I mean, what are some other examples? I know, Joe, you've also studied this, of relatively widespread conspiracy theories.
So in my most recent polling, we asked about 22, And just to put the 30% number into perspective, there are some that are, you know, have been much higher than that. And there are many which are popular as conspiracy theories, but just aren't that widely believed. So when you say, you know, if I say the word conspiracy theory, what comes to the top of your mind? A lot of people will say, oh, faked moon landing. But barely anyone believes that. I mean, that's a 5 to 10% belief. It's very fringe. In my most recent poll, the ones that got the most people agreeing with it were that the 1% controls the government. So this is the Bernie Sanders campaign mantra. And then that comes in at 54%. And then right after that, I think we got 50% believing that Epstein didn't kill himself. So those seem to be the biggest ones. And just to put JFK in perspective, I mean, more recently when I've been polling on that, that came in at about 45%, which is down from the historic low where it was close to 80% for a few decades.
Yeah. And I'm sure some people are sitting here listening to this and may have heard one of the conspiracy theories that I mentioned in the opening, or one of the conspiracy theories that you just mentioned, and thought, well, wait, but like, isn't that kind of true? Or aren't there some like, you know, veins of truth in that? And be thinking, well, like, what are we talking about here? So how do we define what a conspiracy theory is? And where's the line between a theory, evidence, and just a conspiracy theory?
Whenever I mention the 1% thing, I always get a lot of pushback, particularly from lefties and Bernie types. They're like, but they really do control everything. And the answer is no, no, they don't. There is no economics textbook you will pick up that says, how is the economy run? And it says, page one, the 1% controls everything. End of book. So that's just not real. And it's, you know, a fever dream for the radical left. The way I define it is a small group operating in secret for their own benefit against the common good, and in a way that undermines our bedrock ground rules against widespread force and fraud. And to differentiate a conspiracy theory from a conspiracy, which would be documented and real, is that the conspiracy theories have yet to be affirmed by the appropriate knowledge-generating bodies.
Which, I mean, you have to have some sort of definition somewhere, but like one of the things I love about that definition is, well, then you sort of leave it up to them to tell you when the conspiracy is a conspiracy or not. And that seems like it makes it hard to actually differentiate again, right? Because if it's an official knowledge body that sort of has to confirm it, well, that sort of takes you back around to, like, if you don't trust the official knowledge bodies, you're sort of back where you started.
Then you're a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
So the issue is going to be, because this is what comes up with JFK. They'll say, well, the Warren Commission was in on it, so we can't trust what they said.
Right.
So the answer to that isn't more conspiracy theories. The answer is more knowledge-generating bodies. And then the caveat there is that they have an expertise in that appropriate area and make their data and methods available to refutation. So, for example, if the Warren Commission came out and said, well, we've determined this is what happened. Oh, and by the way, we're not going to tell you how we determined it or what data we based that on. Then I would say, okay, I'm not going to put any stock in that belief or into their conclusion. But I think one thing that's important here is that we can say, listen, there is some evidence for a conspiracy theory, and perhaps we should investigate that further. And maybe at that point, we don't have to say it's false, and we don't have to say that we believe it either. We could just say maybe it calls for further investigation. Right? But when we poll on these beliefs, what we're saying is, do you believe it? And we have people saying, yes, I believe that to be true. So there's a difference there. I mean, I can say, yeah, maybe there's some evidence for a particular conspiracy theory. Maybe there's a need to investigate it. Or maybe no one's investigated it, and there's just no way to tell right now. At that point, I would just say, I'm going to wait until people with more expertise than me can provide direction here.
All right. So we've kind of set the groundwork for what we're talking about when we talk about conspiracy theories. The question here is, why have these conspiracy theories grown rampantly over the past couple months surrounding COVID-19? What about this specific case has been conducive to conspiracy theories?
Conspiracy theories seem to arise in these situations where people feel a lack of control, where there's uncertainty, where the official story sometimes changes. And you've got all of that stuff really coming together in this particular case. I mean, anytime you have a big emotional news story happening in real time and nobody exactly knows how all the details work yet, you're going to have things kind of back up and change, and we find out new things and the stuff we thought we knew turns out to be wrong. But that just kind of heightens this sense of uncertainty, and it heightens this sense of lack of transparency. And then there's also been actual lack of transparency. And then everything just kind of comes together to make this space where feeling like you have some control and feeling like you have some kind of answers feels better than not.
So I'll second that, and I'll add that because it's the only thing that everyone's paying attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who are already disposed to concoct these explanations around events and circumstances are going to do it around this. And then further, our political elites, who tend to drive opinions, have been engaging in conspiracy theories themselves. So that's going to drive belief in it, too. So, I mean, one myth that's out there about conspiracy theories is that it's always about big events. And yes, big events are going to attract them, but, you know, your conspiracy theorist off the street is going to have conspiracy theories about everything, events big and small. It's just we're all focused on this thing. So when we poll on it, of course, we're going to get these pretty big numbers right now.
You mentioned in there that political elites are promoting some of these conspiracy theories in this circumstance. So, I mean, that's interesting. One question is that new in American politics and society that elites are the ones promoting the conspiracy theories as opposed to, you know, the average person who feels like they don't have any power or they're out of control? And then my other question is related to the kinds of people who are prone to conspiratorial thinking have those feelings about everything and can explain all kinds of things that happen in the world based on conspiracy theories. In this particular case, is it more just people who generally think conspiratorially, or is it partisans latching on to an explanation for something that they don't like?
I can answer that with numbers, since you guys said you wanted to get wonky.
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, so the first question you asked me was about elites, and if we think that it's only elites now who are engaging in conspiracy rhetoric, we're seeing the past with very rosy hindsight. I mean, Joe McCarthy, and you can go back in time. Sarah Palin comes to mind with the death panels stuff during the Obamacare debates. But certainly that's going on now, where you had the president call this the Democrats' new hoax. Then you had Rush Limbaugh suggest that our public health officials aren't really public health officials. They're members of the deep state. You've had some Fox News personalities encourage people to go to hospitals and film because there aren't really patients there. So there are a lot of prominent voices there who have large audiences who are giving out these conspiratorial and denialist messages that is going to push this further, particularly to people who trust those elites. So what we're finding in the data is that these conspiracy theories tend to be a little bit more believed on the right than they are on the left. So here's the wonky stuff. So when we ask if the threat of COVID-19 was exaggerated to hurt the president in the election year, the correlation with partisanship with that belief was at 0.3, which is fairly high for something like that. Meaning it's not all Republicans believing it, but it's more Republicans believing it than Democrats. But when it's the spread on purpose theory, which doesn't really have a political valence to it, the correlation between that belief and partisanship is 0.08, so it's almost not there at all. But the correlation between that and conspiracy thinking is 0.6, so very high, meaning that for the most part, you know, being a Republican will get you there a tiny bit, perhaps because Trump hasn't been pushing, you know, the bioweapon idea, but I think there was one senator out of Arkansas, Tom Cotton, who was touching upon it gently, talking about Chinese labs and whatnot. So it's slightly more Republican than Democrat, but not much at all. And in order to get there, it's really just conspiracy thinking that's going to get you there.
I want to ask you a question, Joe, because I know that you've done some research in the past about, there was one study of yours that I really loved where you had gone through and like coded letters to the editor that were conspiracy theories sent into the New York Times and the Washington Post for 70 plus years. And I know that when you were doing that research, you were finding that conspiracy theories tended to punch up, that it tended to be something about how the elites were misusing power. coming from the bottom up to the top. And I'm curious about how this situation where you have elites talking about conspiracy theories in public, like how that fits in with that historical research, how that fits in with what we know about how conspiracies have gone in America.
So what we took from that research over time was a theory that has not ingratiated me with conspiracy theorists, but I don't mean this pejoratively, I mean it descriptively, and that is that conspiracy theories are for losers. So what we tended to find was that over time, the party that was out of power tended to lob more conspiracy theories than when they were in power. So the in-power party was sort of a lightning rod for the out-party conspiracy theories. So if you go back in time, you could think about, you know, Bush was in power, and then everyone said, you know, he blew up the Twin Towers, Halliburton, Cheney, war for oil. And then Obama showed up, and it was fake birth certificate and secret Muslim and whatnot. And then Trump showed up, and it was, oh, he's a Russian agent and blah, blah, blah. So in that sense, the losers tend to be attracted to complaining after the fact. And there's something adaptive to that in the sense that politics ain't beanbag. So if you are not in power, you are at the mercy of someone else who is not like you and doesn't share your values, and you need to get your side together and alert them to potential oncoming dangers, and conspiracy theories can certainly do that. But moving beyond just that, I mean, there's two ways to think about it, is that you have people who will see politics as a battle between left and right, and politics who will see it as a battle between us, the people, and them, a corrupt elite. So both of those are sort of, playing out here, where you will have people who are like, well, this is the elites telling us what to do, and I don't need to listen to them. I'm going to do what I want. There's some sentiment there, and there's also sentiment like, well, this is all just a trick to get my president out of office, and we're going to stick it back to them. And both of those could be going on at the same exact time, too, in someone's mind.
You mentioned that usually it's the out-group that is promoting conspiracy theories. In this case, it's the in-group, right? It's the people in power. It's the president. It is the most widely viewed primetime cable show. So why is it in this case that the in-group is promoting conspiracy theories and not as much the out-group?
Well, let me correct you there, because we just went through a couple years of a whole bunch of nonsense coming out of Democrats and the left that accused Trump of doing all sorts of things. Now, I don't think Trump is innocent of everything he's been accused of, but when you have major left-leaning news outlets saying he's a Russian agent and has been one for decades, and then after the Mueller report comes out and says, we don't find evidence of this, and then they double down and say, yes, I'm only proved right that he's even more of a Russian agent. The left has been engaging
in
this. So we are not going to absolve them of their sins for the last 3 years.
Okay? Oh, yeah, for sure. But that tracks with this trend of, like, jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams, et cetera, et cetera. So that makes sense within the paradigm of the out-group is inventing or, you know, latches onto conspiracy theories to explain things that they don't like when they're not in power.
But that doesn't absolve Trump either.
Because this was even happening on day one with, like, voting in California.
So the innovation here is that Trump is doing this. Yeah, it's taken part in certain ways. So Trump didn't claim that he was cheated in the Electoral College. He didn't say that was rigged. He said that was hunky-dory. He's only claims to be cheated when he is one, the loser, or two, under threat. And most of that's been, well, I would have won the popular vote if not for those 3 million illegal voters. Or this whole Russia investigation is part of a scam witch hunt to get me and take me down by the deep state or the Democrats or whoever. But he's sort of the exception that proves the rule. I mean, he is not a standard left-right politician. I mean, he ran under the Republican banner, but he's not Jeb Bush, and he wasn't appealing to the same people that Jeb Bush did. Only in the general, where partisanship started to matter more. But in the primary, I mean, when we investigate people's vote choice in the primary, I mean, Trump voters were highly conspiratorial compared to Rubio or Bush voters, who are much more, you know, normal Republicans. And he has to dance with the girl who brought him to the prom. And that is conspiracy-minded, slightly conservative, slightly Republican types, but who aren't really attached to the party. People who see themselves as in a battle against an entrenched elite, against the deep state. And he plays to that audience.
This makes me sort of wonder whether, do you actually have to be the loser, or can you just feel like the loser? Like, if you just convince yourself you're the loser, even if you're the president of the United States, does that still make you in that position for the conspiracy stuff to happen?
So he has to play as if he is in a battle against an entrenched establishment. And that's his entire mantra. He hasn't changed that. No. So he's always in a battle against evildoers. He's always in a battle against whether it's the deep state or something like that. So he markets himself as an outsider, and he's going to continue to do that. That's his image, and that's what he wants to be. And that's what the – if he turned around and said, well, I'm an establishment fella now, he's going to lose a lot of that support that he's built over the last few years.
Getting back to, you know, the specifics of COVID-19, Maggie, I'm curious if there is something about science as a subject – that makes it particularly ripe for conspiratorial thinking. You know, it seems like a lot of the uncertainties that science presents, that public health presents, that even, you know, statistical modeling presents, are being mined for conspiracy theories.
Well, so I think there's a couple of things happening here. I mean, like, first is that people have a tendency when we talk about this to immediately bring up to me like, well, nobody trusts science anymore. And like, that's actually not true. That's kind of its own little conspiracy theory within the science loving population. Like the trust of science as an institution is actually really high. It's one of the few things in American society, one of the few institutions that actually gets pretty high trust scores. It's like that in the military, you know?
Well, yeah, like Dr. Fauci is kind of the most trusted person in all of this.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, the CDC's trust is sort of taking a hit in this, but in general, like, people actually do trust science, and I've had to yell at scientists about this before at conferences, that it's not, you're not a oppressed, mistrusted class. But I think that there is something to the idea that there's a difference between the way science works, and there's a difference and like how science is taught in school. So like, if what you've done is gone through, you know, regular American school system and you didn't major in science in college, what you've gotten is a series of facts that you had to memorize. And you've gotten this sort of process taught into you that like, and then we discovered a thing and then we knew it, the end. And you kind of come away with this idea that it is more absolute in its answers and that it's simpler in getting there than I think it actually is. And things like this put us in a really intimate place with scientific uncertainty that most of us are not familiar with being in. And it's a really uncomfortable place. I mean, hell, it's uncomfortable for me. And like, I actually am pretty well versed in, you know, uncertainty in science. And it's still difficult to talk about and difficult to explain that this is the best that we can do in terms of this is the most truth we have, but it's still not absolute truth. It's a hard thing to like really wrap your head around.
I've seen comparisons drawn between COVID-19 conspiracy theories and climate change conspiracy theories. Do you also see those comparisons? Do you think they're just?
I think that there is some differences there because with the climate change conspiracies, I mean, there's a whole infrastructure of people, you know, of companies that benefit from actually like laying the groundwork for that. And there's been a lot of research sort of showing where some of that stuff comes from. And I don't know that there's that much of like an entrenched situation here. You know, there's not funding coming from big corporations to make sure that the science on COVID-19 is questioned. So it's a little bit different. And I think that the climate change conspiracy theories are a little bit different from a lot of other conspiracy theories that way, because in that case, doubting science is good for somebody's bottom line.
Yeah, it would be tough to not believe in science writ large, because then you'd be like, oh my God, I don't believe in gravity. It's like grab onto something. So really what it is that people are picky and choosy with what they choose to put their conspiracy theories on. And usually it has to get activated around something. And that was the case with climate change, where you had vested interests who wanted to cast doubt over that. So they did. And that exists largely on the right, largely because those interests work through the Republican Party. And you have Republican elites saying things like, this is the greatest hoax ever. So that's why you get it there. You know, but imagine that guy who goes to the doctor's office and the doctor says, you know, do you want to get your flu shot? And he goes, no, I don't trust you. Well, when the guy gets the flu, he's probably going to go back to the doctor's office and get treated for the flu. So it's people pick and choose what they want to deny and what they don't want to deny. So it's not really, you know, I hate science and I disregard all findings of science. It's what they're influenced to apply that conspiracy thinking to in science that will do it.
Yeah. I'm curious here as a political question, given that this is being promoted by some political and media elites, do conspiracy theories affect political behavior? I mean, do we see people voting in elections because they're motivated by conspiracy theories, or even not voting because they believe that the sinister forces in American life are so strong that, you know, there's no point in voting? Like, how does all of this interact with the political process in America?
So when I started doing this in 2012, when I was running my first polls, I found that people who had strong levels of conspiracy thinking were less likely to register, to vote, to put up yard signs, to donate, to take part in any way. And I think that's what happens in a normal election, is that the people who think the whole system's rigged against them aren't really going to take part in it. Also, we found that people who were high conspiracy thinkers were less likely to invest in the stock market, even controlling for income. So if the system's rigged, you're just not going to take part in it. That seemed to change in 2016, where Trump really made overtures to these people and brought them into his coalition, made them a main part of it. And I think what he does to keep them involved, donating and turning out for him, is that he has to keep jacking them up on conspiracy rhetoric. So that's why he doesn't stop, because this is the tune that gets his base working.
So I think this is interesting because I've done some research. It's not exactly conspiracy theories, but it's trust and mistrust in American politics. And when I've talked to those researchers, they've sort of talked about how, like, the less trust that there is, the less trust people have, the more cynicism people have effectively. It doesn't necessarily mean they don't vote. What it does do is predispose them towards outsider candidates, towards people who, like, aren't part of the elite. And it seems like there must be ways that that's sort of overlapping with this, that you have all these people with a lot of energy and a lot of motivation and not a lot of trust in the system. And where does that go?
Yeah, so in 2012, what we found was that people who had really high levels of conspiracy thinking were likely to identify with third parties, and independents were, you know, showed tendencies towards being more conspiracy-minded than partisans. So, I mean, it's easy to get into this partisan battle where they point fingers back and forth and say, well, it's the other side that's the bunch of conspiracy kooks, and no, it's the other side. But if you're joined in a party, you're pretty much part of the establishment. You've accepted the system. So at most, you're going to point your finger at the other side rather than the system as a whole. It's the sort of the independents and the third party types who think everything is sort of rigged and we need massive change in order to rid ourselves of it.
You mentioned that there is some partisanship influencing these specific COVID-19 conspiracy theories, which makes sense given that there is some partisan motivation behind them. When we step back from this specifically, is there a partisan imbalance in terms of which party is more likely to believe in conspiracy theories apart from the third party?
No.
All right. You hear that, everybody? You can't blame the other side.
And particularly Democrats don't want to believe me when I say that, because I think it's sort of been drilled into them that they're the rational ones and it's the other side that are a bunch of conspiracy kooks. But it's just, you know, when we measure this in survey after survey after survey, the predisposition to buy in is just equal between both sides. And I'm sorry if you don't like it, but that's that. When you look at individual conspiracy theories, if there is a partisan element to it, or if there is elites from one side or the other have staked out a position on it, then you will find an imbalance. So, for example, yes, climate change, you're going to have mostly Republicans, but that's because Republican elites push that. Mm-hmm. But if Nancy Pelosi came out tomorrow and said, we've just discovered that climate change is a hoax by the Koch brothers to make us buy their solar panels or something, then all of a sudden you're going to have tons of Democrats buying into this, right? So, you know, one thing we should not allow is for, you know, Democrats to say, well, my side believes the right thing on this, because we've all sat down and read the science and we go through the climatology journals and we've come to the right belief. No, they come to the beliefs they have because they listen to the elites who've taken positions on it. And it just so happens on that issue, Democrats are aligned with the science on it. And Republicans aren't. So that's why you find that relationship there. But when you poll on other things, you know, where that's not the case, you're just not going to find the imbalance there.
The thing about COVID-19, I guess, that makes an interesting case study for you is that everyone around the world is experiencing at the same time. And so you can kind of judge how different populations cope with it. Is the United States, when it comes to COVID-19 or politics more broadly, any more or less likely to buy into conspiracies than other countries? I mean, oftentimes we think of maybe the Scandinavian countries or Australia as having high trust in their governments. And does that accompany fewer beliefs in conspiracy theories? You know, how do we measure up against our peers around the world?
So I've taken part in some multinational polls. It's tough to get good measures that translate across borders, because the things that one country will care about aren't going to be the same things that another country cares about. So we have a long history with alien conspiracy theories here. It's part of our culture, especially since Roswell. But other countries aren't so big into thinking that their government's covering up alien landings. I mean, in my recent poll, I got 1 in 3 Americans think the government's covering up alien visitations. The next highest country that I've seen is Argentina. They had about 1 in 4 Argentinians buying into those sorts of ideas. But if you go across Europe, it's at best 1 in 10. So it's just not as big there. But that doesn't mean that writ large, we are more conspiratorial than some of those other countries. I mean, if you look at more general measures, you'll find that we are on par with the UK, for example, but much more so than some Scandinavian countries. If you compare beliefs about climate change, then I think Australia probably has us beat, because you have a pretty strong contingent there. So I guess to answer you simply, it's that different conspiracy theories will get different numbers in different countries based on what's going on there. If the elites are backing it, or if it's part of their entertainment culture or something, or their history.
I find it fascinating that aliens is something so particular to us. And Argentina. I want to know why the Argentinians are into aliens.
I live in Miami. So I wanted to know this too. So I was having a dinner party with these Argentinian folks. And I said, well, you know, I got the survey result where it's 1 in 4 Argentinians think there's aliens landing and the government knows about it. And they turned to me and said, well, we'll tell you why we believe it. And I was expecting some sociological answer. And they said, it's because the Vatican is hiding alien spaceships up in the northern mountains of our country. I'm like, oh.
Oh, that.
So obviously this can be like a funny topic. It can also be a pretty serious topic. Like, as I mentioned at the top, this actually influences people's behavior. Whether or not they believe in the severity of COVID-19 can influence whether or not they're wearing masks or, you know, socially distancing, etc., taking precautions that help save lives. So in this particular case, you know, if people believe in aliens, kind of who cares? I don't know if there's any negative consequences of people believing in aliens, but so be it. You know, it's been that way for years. If people wanted to stop the spread of these kinds of conspiracy theories surrounding COVID-19, Maggie, what would they do? How do you go about it?
So I think one thing is interesting about this is that there's actually a debate within the people that I've talked to who study this about whether or not that should even be a goal. Because ultimately there are some conspiracies, right? And there are actual benefits to not unquestioningly accepting what people in power do with their power. And if the goal of the research is to squash all questioning of that, well, maybe that's not actually a good goal. I think that's a really interesting problem and like something that is not super clear, like what to do about it. The other thing
is just like an academic question, right? It seems like in this particular case, it's not a good thing.
I mean, right. But like it's so like, for instance, I think one of the things where it comes up that it actually is sort of problematic with this is some of the stuff with China. Scientists say this is not a genetically engineered virus and that it was not, you know, created in a lab. But at the same time, the Chinese government has a long history of not releasing data in a clearly transparent way. So like there's reasonable questions about whether they're telling us the right numbers about how many people have been sick and how many people died and what connections there are happening there. And I don't know that you necessarily want people not to ask those questions.
See, but in that case, you don't have to go to conspiracy theorizing to do it. Because if you go, if you simply take the idea that, okay, when there's open data from experts that can be verified, then we will certainly tie our beliefs to it. And that's not always the case with China, where it's sort of, they'll say something and then you don't know what the data is underlying that. Mm-hmm. So I would, when people ask me about how do we deal with China and what they say, I would say, well, we have lots of organizations who are studying this, who are gathering data. And when they have lots of data, they will make conclusions and I'll believe it when they get there. And until then, I'm not going to say that China's wrong or that they're lying or this or that, but I'm just simply going to withhold belief and say, I just don't know. And when I have better information, I will tie my beliefs to it.
And I would say also part of the problem with like, how do we solve this is that there's not really great solutions to how to solve this. You know, this is something that the people who are interested in climate change education and climate science have been struggling with for years. And the reality is that they don't have good answers for how you convince somebody to change their mind on a deeply held belief. You know, that's actually a really difficult thing to do and basically involves having people that they trust start telling them different things. But if the people that they trust aren't people who are going to actually look at evidence, well, you're kind of stuck in some ways.
That's exactly right. So when we look at what are the interventions that work, it's when you have trusted sources. So if you're a Republican who thinks that there's death panels, I mean, there was a study by Adam Berensky that showed that if you have a Republican congressperson tell them, oh, no, there's no death panels, then they would change their belief. Mm-hmm. On something like that. But you can't always get, you don't always have an honest Republican at your at your disposal to do those sorts of things. And that goes for the other party too. But to get back to the behavior issue, you have people who buy into these conspiracy theories and there's early evidence suggesting that if on the one hand you think that it's a hoax, you're not going to take part in best practices like hand washing and social distancing. If you think it's a bioweapon, there's evidence that you're going to hoard goods and things. And that's not good either. So, if you think about that, you have people with extreme beliefs sort of operating with extreme behavior because of it. So in this case, I would say there's probably good reason to want to push back on those beliefs and not have people believing in them more than we have to. So finding interventions would be a good thing. But just like you say, I mean, it's not like you're going to put a Jewish person and a Catholic in a closet and lock them together for a day and have them come out, meeting each other halfway, or a Republican and a Democrat sort of making big compromises on things they care about. It's not going to happen. So when people, I get asked this all the time by journalists, how can we reverse these beliefs? I mean, they're really asking a much broader question is, how can we brainwash people to believe exactly what I want them to believe when I want them to believe it? And it's like, it's sort of it gets sort of perverse there too. It's like, how much power do you want to have over other people's minds.
Oh, no, a conspiracy.
Yeah. And I don't, and that's not what myself and my colleagues who do this are up to. We're not trying to, you know, control people's brains. The way I think about it is we're more trying to, you know, what's the best way to give authoritative information to people? But I can see the, you know, that such methods could be abused by people with power for nefarious ends. And I wouldn't want that.
So, I mean, the simple answer is, evidence-based information has to come from the people that you already trust. Is mm-hmm. that the short answer?
Yeah.
Wrapping up here, I'm curious about the role that the media can play in this. You know, we're bringing these conspiracy theories to the fore in discussing them here. You know, they've been aired on all different kinds of TV networks. Do we ultimately do a disservice by talking about them and broadcasting them to more people, even if we're talking about them in the context of this is a deleterious thing? Or are we being responsible here? I mean, how do you talk about conspiracy theories without provoking more conspiracy theories?
I mean, I know that when it comes to one of the things that I've learned over the years, that when it comes to fact-checking or debunking stories, you have to be careful like how you word it, because if you put, did someone really like make the thing in the lab? That actually starts to get people thinking, oh, maybe they did make the thing in the lab. And so you have to like word those truth or false things in ways that they'll like lend credence to the it as an idea. That's actually one of the reasons I don't really like doing debunking stories, because on a certain level, you're kind of A, wasting your time, and B, possibly lending credence to the idea.
And also sometimes reinforcing ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen research that, you know, people who have loosely held beliefs, conspiracy theories, if you start showing them evidence that contradict that theory, they'll start to believe it even more.
Mm-hmm.
There's some evidence of that. How well that is generalizable is yet to be seen. So I imagine that happens in some instances with some people at some times. I don't know if it's a regularity. But with that said, I doubt that hardcore conspiracy theorists are watching this or are watching, you know, most mainstream news sources or reading PolitiFact or anything like that. Perhaps on occasion, but not normally. And, you know, when we talk about these beliefs in this way, we're going to give a much better treatment than what they're going to get in all the other media outlets that they might be accessing. You know, I mean, and because this stuff is ubiquitous and it's everywhere. And, you know, go put on the History Channel. It used to be about history. Now it's about alien conspiracies. You know, go put on Animal Planet. I thought it was about real animals, but instead it's finding Bigfoot. Let the cat out of the bag. They haven't found him yet. And I think the number one show on that might have been the mermaid conspiracy, where the Navy's killing off the mermaids with secret supersonic weapons. So this stuff is out there, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I guess by talking about it, it's probably the best way to make people aware on what we can and should do. And maybe it'll alert whatever conspiracy theorists are watching and paying attention to these discussions that, you know, there is a category for those beliefs, and they ought to add extra scrutiny to them.
All right. Well, that aligns with our goals here at 538. Try to find evidence. Scrutinize whatever beliefs come your way. I guess it's kind of like a difficult conversation, and that beyond that, even if these conspiracy theories are having negative impacts, there's not much you can do. Is that like a pessimistic note to end on?
I mean, it is, yes.
But if you want a quick positive note, here's what you can do. If you wind up interacting with people who have a conspiracy theory that they're not sure about, or they're like, what do you think about this? Those are the people you can reach, and those you can and should reach with the best information you can, and do it with sympathy and kindness.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Joe, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Joe Uzinski is a political science professor at the University of Miami. He researches conspiracy theories and misinformation and wrote the book American Conspiracy Theories. And also, thank you, Maggie, for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
And Maggie Kurth is 538's senior science writer. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcast@538.com. And by control room, I don't mean there's any conspiracy going on. I just mean that he is recording this on Skype. So thank you, Tony.
He's recording everything we say.
You can also, of course, tweet at us if you have any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.